You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Mike Papantonio sitting in for Tom this hour and the last hour. LBJ was criticized by Republicans for his nuclear Holocaust commercials where a child was in the foreground of a camera shot playing with a flower. The scene then cuts to the background of a mushroom cloud expanding across the scene where a nuclear bomb was exploding in the background shot. Spot became known as the Daisy ad. Johnson was in a presidential race with Barry Goldwater, who really was a true war hawk. The same caliber of Mitt Romney, if you can imagine that. The Republicans whined and made gurgling sounds like only Republicans can do, and LBJ pulled the ad that truthfully did capture what was possible with a vote for Barry Goldwater. I hesitate to compare Goldwater with Romney because Goldwater had a better intellect. He was more capable of filtering information that could have pushed America towards world war with Russia and China. Goldwater was not an etch-a-sketch, blow-with-the-wind kind of conservative. He wasn't a snake oil salesman opportunist like Mitt Romney. But I agree with Johnson. Goldwater surrounded himself with war pimps who were still reeling from Dwight D. Eisenhower pointing out that America's military-industrial complex was a true-to-life war-promoting operation, always looking for an opportunity to use their arsenals. If you're a parent, you should be evaluating Mitt Romney, not according to how you believe he's going to handle the economy, but according to how dangerous Mitt is when it comes to potential global war catastrophe. Last night's debate showed us how clueless and inept Mitt Romney really is when it comes to foreign policy. He failed basic geography when he told us that Syria shares a border with Iran. That Iran had no access to the sea, according to Mitt. A route through Syria was their only way in. It was clear that he didn't know that Iran has 1,500 miles of coast on the Arabian Sea. He made it obvious that he didn't understand how a modern 21st century military actually works. He didn't know three decades ago, the U.S. abandoned the bigger is better military nonsense for security with better technology. That's why we went. That's why Rumsfeld was so anxious to go to war with Iraq to prove our new technology was good. A nitwit lost in time. That's what we saw last night. He showed us that he has no idea what trade sanctions are in place when he suggested that the U.S. should stop importing oil from Iran. I guess nobody had told him that Ronald Reagan 3 years before had said the same thing. And we don't trade. They don't send Iran oil into our borders because his guy, Ronald Reagan, stopped it 3 decades ago. But all of this bumbling and nonsense about foreign policy isn't what should scare the hell out of most voters. The scariest thing about Mitt Romney is his willingness to not only adopt the same tactics as George Bush, but his eagerness to push those policies to the extreme. He's a dangerous, childlike thinking, Cold War throwback that wants to promote war, where G.I. Joe and Captain America, in his mind, always win simply because they're American. It's called American exceptionalism, and he's bought into it fully. Here's the 10,000-foot. 60% of the foreign policy advisors Mitt has already tapped to help him make decisions are the same war pimps that worked for Bush. Virtually every day you can find one of them screaming for an attack on Iran, demanding a war with North Korea, promoting the idea of an invasion with Syria. Watch out how China and Russia respond when both of them get their oil from Iran, when both of them remind us that both countries are heavily invested in financing and trade with both Syria and Iran. China's actually helping Iran build out their infrastructure, roads, bridges, freeways. Let's invade Iran, according to Mitt, as if China is not going to do anything about it. Mitt is oblivious and he's tactless in urging Israel to go bomb the hell out of Iran, that he's simply morphing into this Dr. Strangelove or worse. Mitt has morphed into Dick Cheney, who, by the way, Mitt considers his most trusted advisor on war policy. Those are his words. Mitt's second most trusted advisor is John Bolton, the dangerous, demented oddball with the big mustache, who helped Mitt draw up his defense policy that would build 5 more warships than the military said they wanted. That's what we heard last night. The Cheney-Mitt Bolton plan would add 100,000 more troops to our military ranks, increase the Pentagon's fund money, budget by another, $200 billion is the best number I can come up with from everything I can see. About 6% of the U.S. GDP would go to military spending under Mitt. There are no plans on what the military will do with that money. It's a gift from Mitt, and nobody has any plans what the hell they're going to do with it. Right now, there aren't enough wars. There aren't enough rumors of wars to satisfy Mitt. He appears to be looking ahead. Here's what you need to understand. He's looking ahead, anticipating his chance to start pushing missile buttons from the damn Oval Office. That's why he wants to put $200 billion into a plan that's set to fail. When it's all over, if you extrapolate the money, it's $2 trillion. $2 billion is just what he says he wants to put on one. $2 trillion altogether. Most of us knew that W was going to be a childlike, impressionable type, impressionable by war hawks who surrounded him from the first day he slipped into office. It wasn't that his eyes were too close together or that he seemed incapable of original thought. We recognized the power and influence of unchecked, wildly independent Pentagon money, in Pentagon influence, with such an impressionable, tiny little mind like George Bush. But can you visualize how wildly influenced and dominated Mitt's going to be? It'll be the equivalent of pink Play-Doh in the hands of neo-nuts like Dick Cheney and John Bolton, just itching for another grand war. But China won't be playing with containment tactical weapons, ladies and gentlemen. And that's what should be scaring the hell out of all those soccer moms who still don't understand what the hell's happening out there. Between Russia and China's capabilities, that small mushroom cloud LBJ used to scare the bejesus out of voters, hell, it would look like the 4th of July fireworks in a park compared to what Mitt has potential to do in the Mideast. And if a soccer mom doesn't understand that, and if she thinks that the economy is the big issue, she better start paying better attention. The voiceover that LBJ used in the ad that I'm truly glad he delivered said that there was too much at stake to allow Goldwater access to thermonuclear weapons. Johnson warned that voters in that ad, he said the stakes were too high. He said, you can't take a chance. He said the potential horror was too great to just stay at home when our children can live in peace or the world can move into a new kind of nuclear darkness. And that is where Mitt would take us, nuclear darkness, I can assure you. If you're thinking this election is only about the economy, you're dead wrong. If you're saying this is going to be just an easy foray into the Middle East, not to worry if Mitt gets in charge here. If you aren't seeing bomb clouds behind a Mitt Romney presidency, and you're more concerned about the economy than understanding that this Mormon feels like it is manifest destiny for him. This man who believes he is guided by Joseph Smith's dictate to engage America in a new manifest destiny, and that American exceptionalism will always prevail, that he sees himself as a damn G.I. Joe or a Captain America, where America always prevails. If you are believing that, you are not paying attention to what's happening. This is critically important. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm Mike Papantonio sitting in for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back with Chauncey DeVega to talk about last night's debate.
But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman this hour. I have blogger and author Chauncey DeVega with me now. We're talking about last night's third and final presidential debate. If you don't know who Chauncey DeVega is, you must find out. He simply always has his finger on the pulse of politics in this country, always has an interesting approach to the discussion. Chauncey, how do you see anything but American exceptionalism going crazy in this Mormon's mind last night?
I mean, I was thinking about your superhero illusions. And remember back in the 1950s when Superman was on TV and kids would get on the roof and jump off of the roof and think they could fly like Superman?
Sure, I did it myself, Chauncey. I hate to admit it.
We have a bunch of folks who met Romney and his advisors from the Bush administration, old school neocons who want to basically start World War III, in my opinion, as you said, really living in a dream world. I mean, lies cause wars. A lack of transparency causes conflict. And Mitt Romney is a corporate pitch man, professional liar, right? He's willing to say and do anything to get elected, and that is not a formula for safety abroad or American power at home.
Yeah, but this is not something that's just been beat into his head because he's been a Republican for so long, and it is the Republican way to shoot first and ask questions later. It's actually part of who he is as a Mormon, and that is this notion that, you know, it is, if you take a look at what Joseph Smith had to say about the power of America, it is almost, don't you get the sense that he thinks in terms of a new manifest destiny?
I mean, he's beyond the shining city on the hill, right? That old statement about America's role in the world, because he does see himself as a messianic figure, right? He was raised to believe that he has a chosen destiny in this world, and he's overlaid his religious viewpoints. And I mean, one of the things that really scared me last night, you know, under Bush, we worried about Christian dominionism and the idea that these folks actually believe in the end times prophecies and making the end of the world come true, is that Mitt Romney sort of has a parallel set of beliefs about America's predestiny in the world. And if he has to choose between what his faith and his upbringing and his socialization tells him about American foreign policy and what empirical reality tells him, he's going to do the first thing and not the second thing.
What did you think, though? My take on this idea of agreeing with everything that Obama has as far as policy. Now, you know, here's the way I saw that today. You know, if a person is given the choice of two candidates, the average voter, they're given the choice of two candidates, but the candidates agree with each other on virtually everything on something like foreign policy. I mean, given, if you take a look at what he had to say, it's virtually everything except the issue of when to go to war. Mm-hmm. Now, if given that, we know the statistics, we know the voter is going to go with the guy that's already in office because he's a proven quantity. This idea of saying, well, let me wrap my arms around Obama and just be, you know, buy into that camp. What did you think about that, and what do you think is the net effect of it?
Well, I think the net effect is, I mean, you and I and your listeners, we care about politics, right? We understand foreign policy. We care about these issues. But the low-information, independent voter out there doesn't know anything about foreign affairs. It's too complicated. They find it too difficult to follow, right? It's too technical. So what Romney did last night is basically clinch Obama so Obama couldn't throw a punch, and he basically tried to mirror him, right? But as one of my analogies was, last night's debate really was like watching an adult school a child. Mitt Romney really has no expertise. He reminds me, my question was, does Mitt Romney know as much about foreign policy as a fifth grader? Obama's a professor who's been making hard choices and difficult calls, and Romney is clinching him because he really has nothing to offer. So Romney's gamble is two things. One, it's like, okay, folks are going to make a decision based on the economy, and I can spend and I can lie and I can use my experience as a gangster capitalist with Bain to try to distract the public and say, see, I'm better than that guy. The other thing we have to be very careful about, and you and I have talked about this a lot, is the stark contrast. We have America's first president who happens to be African-American. We have an old money candidate for the Republican Party who really sort of traffics in a very particular type of white identity politics. And he's gambling that when folks go into the voting booth, that the Bradley effect will become a zombie that becomes real. That these folk are going to vote their anxieties and fears and say, you know what, we gave that other guy a shot, but this Mitt Romney guy ran a business, and he basically says the same things about foreign policy that Obama says. So why don't we go back to the new normal, and we're going to reelect a Republican? And I think that was his strategy.
Well, what I think is interesting today, though, is the spin from the right-wing echo chamber is that, gee whiz, we know our guy got clobbered last night, but that's okay because nobody cares about foreign policy. I don't know that that's true. I don't know that at this point people who have – look, this guy has a long history. We know that at this point he surrounded himself with about 90% of the war hawks who lied their way into Iraq. that had our American soldiers murdered on the battlefield for a lie based on something called weapons of mass destruction. We saw that. We saw an administration, the Bush administration, that allowed 3,000 Americans to be murdered on American soil because of sheer incompetence. Because not only the president didn't read his papers, didn't read his briefing papers, but his staff didn't read their briefing papers. That's sheer that's incompetence. I wish we'd see more of that. What do you think? 1 minute is what I've got left.
No, absolutely. Here's something that Obama and the Democrats need to say. Mitt Romney during the Vietnam War went out and protested in favor of a war that killed almost 60,000 Americans. Well, he had a draft deferment and ran off to Europe to vacation. Do you want someone who is that flippant in terms of their sense of responsibility and their jingoism to repeat the failed policies of the past and get us in another situation that really did cause the Great Recession that we're in?
Real quickly, do you think it's worth spending the money even talking about international affairs like that just 2 weeks out from the election?
Absolutely. I think you need to make direct appeals and talk about the $4 trillion war, talk about Mitt Romney's incompetence, and talk about the fact that he's clearly a man who will lie to win an election at home, and he will lie to our friends and allies abroad. And
we forget easily, don't we, Johnson? We forgot that Republican incompetence caused 3,000 Americans to be murdered on American soil. And nothing has changed, really, about that level of incompetence. And I think, if I look at it, it is worth talking about, even in these last 2 weeks. Chauncey DeVega, thanks for joining me. As usual, you've always got your finger on the pulse. I'm Mike Papantonio, in for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I'm Mike Papantonio, in for Tom Hartman. I'm going to have John Nichols back when we come back for debate recap. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio. Let's hope that crazy Mitt doesn't get a chance to rule the world. Look, I'm getting a lot of tweets coming in. These are all really great points. Progressive Girl says the international community has rejected the unilateral approach. Obama's multilateral partnership has restored America's faith in us. Exactly. It's restored peace. Donetta D. Cook, Mickey Mouse could be Republican candidate, and the uninformed public wouldn't care because they're so low information that Mitt can get up. What I think D's point here is that Mitt can get up on the air and say whatever he wants to say because nobody answers questions, and fact checks don't make any difference because the public doesn't really even go back to see what the fact check is about. So it's a different kind of America right now where you have low information voters that are just have the chance to turn this election into a Mitt Romney victory if you don't get out there and get involved. I'll tell you, I've been following, of course, most of you have been following John Nichols for so long with The Nation magazine. He's Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine. He's author of the book Uprising, an excellent book that should be required reading in school. I have John with me. John, what's your take on last night? Give me some points we're not hearing in the press today.
Well, let me just suggest to you that people hear debates in different ways. And so somebody in Florida might hear a debate in a very different way than somebody in Virginia who lives by a military base and than somebody in Ohio who's really worried about trade.
Right.
And so it's often that a debate is a bifurcated message or a multiple message. In this debate, however, I think it is safe to say that Barack Obama hit multiple marks with remarkable skill. And, after the first debate, I think we had sort of that bizarre situation where everybody was like, wow, Obama's incompetent or Obama somehow doesn't have it in him. The reality is he had a bad debate. It does happen to people.
Well, the talk was that he's a great stump speaker, but he's not a great debater. And so that was the talking point coming from the right. The last night changed that. I think the last debate changed that, don't you?
I do. And see, one of the right things, you and I end up, and we get paid to do it a little bit. We listen to right-wing talk radio sometimes. We pay attention to what they say. One of their big themes is that Barack Obama only functions off a teleprompter, that he can't possibly think on his feet. It's an insulting theme. It may even have an element of a racial overtone.
Oh, it definitely does.
But it's the reality that they say that. What you saw, I think, a week ago, very, very well, but last night in exemplary form, was Obama as the master debater, you know, the kind of guy who really is great at this. And why was he so good at it? It was because he was on top of the information and he was relaxed with the information.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. In the second debate, I think he knew he had to make a comeback.
Oh, he was fighting for his life. He was fighting for his life in the second debate.
He was aggressive and it came through. This debate was different. There were points at which Mitt Romney was babbling for 10 minutes almost.
Yeah, yeah.
And Obama just let him babble.
Okay, let me go to the tough questions, John. Yeah. What is it that this changes, if anything? First of all, did anybody care? Okay, does the average voter care about what's happening in the Middle East? Do they care that the man who wants to be president doesn't know where Syria is located, that he has no idea that we've moved in three decades ago, that we moved away from bigger is better to technology is better with our military? I mean, do they care? I mean,
they do care, but they may care in different ways and with different levels of engagement. Step back, take a breath. Everybody should, and understand what the foreign policy debate is. We don't talk about our president as the commander in chief when we're talking about education policy or manufacturing at home or things of that nature. We talk about our president as the commander in chief when we are discussing military affairs, international affairs, how we operate in the world. So this was the commander-in-chief debate. This is the one where people who take that title particularly seriously, they're listening a little more closely. They're trying to hear, you know, what are you saying? What's coming from you? And knowing about the modernization of ships, knowing about where we're moving as a military, that has real meaning to a section of voters, many of them retired military, but also some of them current military, who hear a more sophisticated president.
Certainly knowing that we have a candidate, Mitt Romney, who says, I want to give you $200 billion more dollars than you want. I want to fund the military to the point to where it's almost 6% of the GDP. I want to give you 5 battleships that you don't even want. Doesn't that send a message to somebody who's thinking, who says, well, wait a second. The military said we don't want all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So do we conclude that you're the 90% of the advisors that you have around you, of course, the same people that got us involved with Iraq based on a lie. Do we conclude that you're looking for a war? Is the American public that smart? Is the soccer mom mom who might have a 10 or 12 year old right now? Does she understand that that child might be subject to war before it's all over with because we got a nut in the White House?
I'm not sure that's the case. I think that is a sophisticated argument that those who share perhaps your perspective, my perspective, and have followed things the way we have might come to. And also a few other folks, because Obama certainly did emphasize that. But more critically, I think that it suggests something that even goes more fundamental than that, that Romney appears to be ignorant and desperate. And when you are ignorant and desperate, you will say, promise, and even do anything that might make you politically viable.
Okay, the ignorant part is easy to follow. Tell me what your take is on the desperate part. Tell me what you come away and you say he looked like a desperate. I had the same impression, but I'm interested in comparing notes here, John.
Watch the appeal when Romney went into the quote-unquote apology tour line when he tried to suggest this. And, you know, he was trying to repeat certain things. Our allies noticed that. People noticed that you didn't go to Israel on that trip. And he was just banging away, you know, clearly almost saying, you know, look, hey, Palm Beach County in Florida, are you listening to me? I really desperately want your vote. And it was, there was an unsophisticated appeal.
Yeah.
It was sort of such a desperate appeal. And the tragedy for Mitt Romney, is that this is not a new desperation. It's
right.
Not something that came on this week. When he went to Israel as a candidate this summer, and I wrote a lot about it.
Yeah, you did. Good coverage, by the way.
Opportunities to meet with the Israeli peace camp, with key Palestinians, with senior political people, with folks in Mossad. He passed up opportunities to meet with these people so he could hold fundraisers. And Barack Obama, I think in the most devastating moment of the debate, came back after that desperate Mitt Romney appeal and said, you know, when I went to Israel, I didn't take along campaign donors. I didn't hold fundraisers. I went to Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial, to be reminded once more of why we must defend Israel.
Yeah, and it made you think of the other thing Obama didn't do was he didn't go to Israel and tell the Palestinians that they're second-class citizens, incapable of flourishing because they're lazy and ignorant. That's one thing Obama didn't do that Mitt Romney did.
And he did meet with all of the different players. And all I'm saying is that's where you see the desperation.
Okay, let me take
tragically to get a vote.
John, let me take you the bigger issue. The Mideast, when we talk about the Mideast, we're not simply talking about a desert. We're not talking about a desert war when things go bad. We're talking about an international confrontation that's not with tactical missiles. It is with nuclear arms, because you have China, you have Russia. China at this point, if think about this, built the infrastructure in Syria, built the infrastructure in Iran. What? Give me your. I got 1 minute. Tell me where you think this can go bad.
Well, it can go bad with ignorance. It can go bad with not knowing the dynamics. And you know, when you have Mitt Romney standing up there saying, you know, look, I've got different attitudes on Russia. You know, I'm going to say this. I'm going to get tough with these folks. Well, you know what? If you can't find Iran on a map, if you think that Syria is the way that Iran, a country with a 1,500-mile coastline, gets to the sea, you really shouldn't be talking so tough.
Well,
you should be studying geography.
Let's hope people watching last night got some sense of it. John Nichols is, if you don't, I'm sure you do follow Nichols. If you're progressive and you want to know what real news is, he is the progressive that every day you can go to John Nichols and he'll give you the story that really matters. He's Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine, longtime friend, great intellectual. I'm Mike Papantonio. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. Call me at 866-987-8466. I'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio today. Let me know what you're thinking. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. This hour, Fortunate Son. You got it. Tag Romney, the Fortunate Son. Mom's out there saying, oh, gee whiz. You know, yeah, Tag wants to go get in a fight with the president, wants to box the president. But the question came up, well, why doesn't Tag go serve in Afghanistan? Why doesn't Tag go serve in Iraq? This tough guy, Tag. The Fortunate Son. Why doesn't he do that? And then mommy comes out and says, oh, well, you have no idea how difficult it is, how dangerous it is to be a Mormon missionary. Seriously? how difficult it is to be a Mormon missionary when kids are coming back from the Middle East with no legs and no hands, blinded, dead? And mommy has the audacity to say that to active military people. My son, my little Bobo Tag, well, man, he was in harm's way. Really? How about Dave in Northeast Indiana? Dave, you there?
Yeah. I was wondering, you know, I don't know if you saw The Choice from PBS. David Brooks mentioned, he said, you know, Romney, the businessman, knows to close the deal, he must adjust his sales pitch to the beliefs of the group to which he is speaking. And you see that. Everything he changes all the time.
Mm.
And I was wondering, would it be legal for President Obama to place on his website video clips of Romney's varying views on a given issue?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, hey, Dave, there's some great ads. There's some, it's the many faces of Mitt. It's extraordinary, Dave. It is one day he's for abortion, the next day he's not. One day he's for contraception, the next day he's not. One day he's for Obamacare, the next day he's not. Look, it's a pathology with Mitt. It's well beyond anything that we can even put our hands on. But understand, Dave, this is a man who is able to go into a boardroom and get his way and say anything he wanted. It's called, here's the term in the business world. It's called a short-term deal, all right? A CEO with a corporation, for example, they have to be credible. They have to say, I'm going to be here for 25 years. What I say matters. The short-term ravage capitalist, the vulture capitalist, has what they call a short-term credibility need. You understand what I mean? In other words, the short-term credibility needs, let me make the pitch, and I can say whatever the hell I want to say, and it's not going to make any difference. And so you've got a guy who came up with a short-term ravage capitalism kind of notion, and that's who he is. Let me go to Paul in Northville, Michigan, watching on Free Speech TV. You there, Paul?
Yeah, how you doing, Mike?
Doing
well,
thanks.
I'm a big fan of yours, by the way.
Well, thank you.
Before my question, I have a quick comment, and that is that Mitt Romney will absolutely destroy our economy, just like George Bush did. He's offering the exact same voodoo trickle-down nonsense, only he's packaging it different, you know? But
my question is,
if Mitt Romney thinks he's G.I. Joe and he can't wait to start two or three wars for other people to go die in, how come when he was that age, he used his daddy's connections and sneaky tricks, you know, being a missionary or whatever, just like George Bush did, used his connections to avoid service?
Well, you know what? Here now, the way there, again, Paul, the most vulgar thing that you can say to an active military person who's lost an arm or a mother who's lost their daughter or their son over in Iraq. The most vulgar thing you can say to them is this. Mitt was in France, and he was under huge risk as a Mormon missionary in France. That really, I'm not making that up. That is the Republican talking point. You have goof brains like Crazy Woman Coulter and Rush Limbaugh actually using those words. Now, picture yourself as the father of an 18-year-old who came back blind because a bomb went off and his life has changed forever. And you're saying, my goofy son, Tag, or my goofy son, Mitt, was in France and they were under grave danger as a Mormon. Where in the hell do you get such a talking point? And at what point do you say that you at what point do you become shameless that you would actually say that to tens of thousands of people all over this country?
Yeah,
but you know,
really
to them it's just Paul, it's a matter of saying whatever has to be said. I got 2 minutes. Let me get this next caller. Mike in Kansas listens on XM satellite. You there, Mike?
Yes, I am enjoying your show as well. The term we used to use was chicken hawk, and the last vestige of a scoundrel is patriotism, and that's where Romney's trying to hide behind, which isn't true. But my question is, why didn't Obama go with the kick the can down the road that we caught in that video of Romney in Boca Raton with his rich supporters.
I got 1 minute. Let me address it. What Mike's talking about is when he's talking about how do we deal with Mideast conflict. What do we do? When he was over there, where we kick in the recording that we saw, the video, he says we simply have to kick the can down the road where it comes to dealing with the Palestinians and the Israelis. We don't know where that's going to go. This is a man who doesn't know where it's going to go. He really doesn't. It was clear he doesn't even know the geography of the area. He doesn't even understand the basics of how a military operation works now in 2012, because he's still back in the 1700s in his concept of what a military engagement looks like. So it's hard to salvage credibility, Mike, with a guy like Mitt. But he, at this point, he's not counting on that. It doesn't make any difference. I've got somebody who just tweeted me saying, you know, Pat, he doesn't care, because it's Michael Jobin says Mitt can say the most ridiculous things because he's counting on election fraud to be on his side. Let's hope it's not that outrageous. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. I'll be back.
Listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Tom Hartman Program. That would be me. And thanks so much to Mike Papantonio for filling in the first hour while my airplane difficulties, shall we say, delayed my getting to Chicago. But I'm here. I'm here. We're doing our show live out of the studios at WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk. And thank you very much to the fine folks here for that. And tonight I'll be at the Hilton downtown on Michigan Avenue here in Chicago as a correspondent about the third-party debates that are going to happen there tonight. And freeandequal.org for more information on that, or you can find a link on our homepage at tomhartman.com. The debate last night was amazing. 24 lies in 41 minutes. Mitt hasn't quite beat his record from the second one, but he's still trying. He's still trying really, really hard. You go through all these things. First of all, he's like, oh yeah, everything Obama's doing that's popular, I'd do that. Now, we heard him say this, you know, variations on this about the economic policies. One of the things last night that I found was amazing was let's block grant Medicare. Medicare, like he says, it's for poor people, you know, so we'll just give it to the states and leave it up to Scott Walker to decide if he wants poor people to have any money, right? Or Rick Scott down in Florida. These guys, they actually. Two-thirds of all the people in nursing homes in America are on Medicare. Lots of people with long-term disabilities. It's not just for poor people. And even if it was, shouldn't poor people have some protections? I mean, what happened to the war on poverty? What happened to compassion? What happened to that supposed Mormon ethos, Minister? I haven't seen any evidence of it. Oh, and we discovered last night that Iran doesn't have any ports. They don't have any access to the water. This is incredible. There's 1,500 miles of coastline in Iran. I mean, this is one of the big problems in that region is that if Iran decided that they wanted to shut down our shipping lanes, our oil lanes, they could take out a fair chunk of them, and they can get into the Mediterranean through the Suez Canal. This apology tour thing, did you hear, Romney, there were so many times that I found myself yelling at the TV. Romney's like, you said that America had been arrogant and had been dictating to people what they should say. Now, when you heard Romney say that, it was in the context of the Middle East. He went on this, apology tour. Obama actually did say that, but it was in Paris, and he was talking about our relationship with Europe. And when he was talking about our being arrogant, he was talking about freedom fries. Remember freedom fries? We're not going to talk about the French anymore. We're going to call them freedom fries. Screw the French. The French don't want to go into Iraq with us. They don't think it's a great idea. This was during the Bush administration. You remember this. It was not that long ago. And not only did he say, you know, in Paris, the United States, you know, or people in the United States have been somewhat arrogant and you know, suggesting what, you know, how you should behave. But he said, also, you guys in Europe, you've been dissing us. You have been dismissing America. You've been dismissive of us. You have not been respectful. He took it to them. That was no apology tour. That was a simple statement of truth. But Romney turned it into what was actually a very elegant speech that Obama gave in Paris. Romney turned it into a lie, pretending that it was saying that in the Middle East, somehow Romney, that Obama was saying, we've dictated to you. Well, you know, the fact of the matter is we have. But Obama didn't say that. But Romney lying about this again. He clearly has this strategy. The Republicans clearly have this strategy of win at all costs. It doesn't matter if it's true. It doesn't matter if it's honest. It doesn't matter if it's credible. It doesn't matter if it contradicts what they said a week earlier, a month earlier, 6 months earlier, a year earlier. It doesn't matter because they're shaking the Etch-a-Sketch. We were warned. I'm telling you, 4 years ago, I was at the CPAC conference in Washington, D.C., the Conservative Political Action Conference. And you know, all the Republicans were, this is 4 years ago. They were all competing with John McCain to be the nominee for the party. And the Mitster was there, W. Mitt Romney, Willard W. Mitt. I think we should call him W. Mitt to, you know, point out how up until last night, his foreign policy positions were the same as George W. Bush's. And the vast majority, I think it's 21 out of 25 or something like close to that, the vast majority of his foreign policy advisors are former Bush administration people. But anyhow, Romney was there. All the candidates were there. And all over the CPAC conference, there were these people. They were just, their heads were exploding. Mitt Romney, are you kidding? We can't have him. It would be a disaster. It would be a terrible thing. Oh, no, 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 no. And there was a guy walking around in a flipper outfit. The conservatives know that Romney will lie. That's been their hit on Romney. I don't know why the Democrats aren't taking some of those clips of Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich and just the whole list of them. I mean, there's of these Republican candidates who basically called out Romney on his lies. He said, this guy's lying. Why are they not taking those and saying, here, don't believe us. Listen to your own peeps. I was going crazy, and he was like, yeah, the Green Revolution was going on in Iran. Now, most people don't even know what the Green Revolution is, and maybe that's why Obama didn't respond, and maybe it was just, hey, you know, Romney's strategy, and I said this to Louisa, as soon as the thing started, Romney went through about a half a dozen lies in, like, his first opening paragraphs. And I said, he's using the spaghetti on the wall strategy, which is you throw as much stuff as you can against the wall, and there's no way that the other guy can clean it all up. Some of it is going to stick. People are going to think some of it's true. So Romney says, oh, yeah, there was this Green Revolution going on, and Obama was silent. And people are going, Green Revolution? What, is this something to do with wind power? Solar power? I don't know. No, the Green Revolution, you know, the Iranian flag is green. It was the Iranian uprising. And he says, and you, Mr. President, were silent. No, he wasn't. Twice he spoke out on this and spoke out fairly strongly, condemning the crackdown on the protesters. And the policy advisors and apparently the opinion of the president was, you know, if the United States inserts itself into this internal thing in Iran right now, there is a battle going on in Iran. You've got half the population is more or less under 25 or maybe even under 20. It's a substantial percentage of young people in Iran. It's a very young country. And it's basically the, you know, the young people versus the mullahs. And the mullahs are saying, America is evil. They hate us. They're going to destroy us. They're going to nuke us. And the young people are going, I don't think so. And what the Obama administration knew is that if they had done what Romney was suggesting last night, if President Obama had stood up and said, yeah, we stand with you guys. We're going to, you know, they should, you know, tear down those dictators. We'll actually intervene if you get down the road. Now, keep in mind, Iran is like a huge modern country. I mean, you know, Tehran, skyscrapers. This is a major metropolitan, it's a major country and a major oil producer, a very wealthy nation. We're not talking about Afghanistan here, which had a $2 billion annual GDP when we started bombing them. The second poorest country on earth. We're not talking about Afghanistan. We're talking about Iran. If the president had started talking about, you know, trash talking Iran the way that Mitt Romney wants, then the mullahs would have said to the young people, see, we told you America's not our friend. And the young people would have said, guess we shouldn't, okay. All right, I guess we're in with you, mullahs. Ahmadinejad, yeah.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Not only will Romney lie to win, but behind his lies are insane policies. Welcome back from Chicago. Tom Hartman here with you. And basically, last night, basically what Mitt Romney was saying was, vote for me because I'll be a Republican version of Barack Obama. And for the swing voters, I mean, I'm sure that there are some who are, okay, he's the white guy one. Right. That so he's you could argue that it's a racial appeal, although, frankly, I don't think it's being made in those terms, at least this part of it. But here is Mitt Romney racing to be Barack Obama. Yeah. Oh, he did that. And it was popular. Yeah, I like that. He did that. It was popular. Yeah, I like that. Oh, he said something in a speech in France. I'm going to criticize that, and I'm going to pretend he said it in Egypt and that he was trashing America. And, we're just going to throw as much stuff out as we can. Right. And when it comes to our economy at home, here, I know what it takes to create 12 million new jobs and rising take-home pay. I mean, the Washington Post gives us four Pinocchios. He says, we're going to have training programs for our workers, right? No, Paul Ryan's budget cuts that by a third. We're going to, we're going to keep Medicare in place. No, Paul Ryan's budget kind of chops away at that. Well, Republicans and Democrats came together on a bipartisan basis to put education principles that focused on having great teachers in the classrooms. He was talking about when he was in Massachusetts. And thank goodness that at least the president interrupted and said, that was 10 years before you were governor. And I think in that moment, you know, that was one of those, the Wizard of Oz, the screen gets pulled back a little bit. I think in that moment, people got it. People realized for at least just a moment, this guy's making stuff up. This guy is lying to us. This guy is talking in half-truths, this Romney guy. I mean, he's saying that he had the best schools Massachusetts had the best schools in the nation, quack, 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 because Republicans and Democrats came together in his state. And he's neglecting to say that it was 10 years before he became governor?
Well, Republicans and Democrats have come together on a bipartisan basis. Right.
And he's going to get rid of Obamacare. Except that, you know, people kind of like their kids being able to get health insurance until they're in their mid-20s. People kind of like the idea that health insurance can't be taken away from you just because you got sick. People like the idea that there's no lifetime caps anymore, so the insurance company, or there won't be shortly, so the insurance companies can't say, oh, sorry, you've spent too much with that particular condition. We're not going to pay anymore. Good luck. Go die. So 24 myths. I've shared, I don't know, half a dozen or so with you. There's a nice summary of them over at the Center for American Progress's blog, Think Progress. He says, and I think that when the president said he was going to create daylight between ourselves and Israel, that they noticed that as well. No, it wasn't true. It's just, I mean, it's, and we have not wasted these 4 years to the extent they continue to be able to spin those centrifuges. No, the sanctions are crippling Iran. And why are we spending all this time talking about the Middle East when the BRIC nations, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, they're the ones that are on the ascendancy right now. In a couple of years, we're not even going to need oil from the Middle East. We're going to be able to say to the Middle East, other than any explicit allies we have in the region, which may or may not include Iraq or Afghanistan, we're going to be able to say to the Middle East, good luck, guys. You're on your own. You got nothing we need, so we're out of here. You know, not that we should necessarily be there because they had something we need to begin with, but that's frankly been American foreign policy up to the, you know, well, to this day, you know, since post-Civil War America. He says, it's not government investments that make businesses grow and hire people, Romney says. Right. So he thinks that government spending will not create jobs. But what's his plan to create jobs? To spend $2 trillion in the military. Well, that will create jobs. The military hiring a lot of people, building a lot of things. His whole thing about the Navy, you know, Obama came back and said, you know, the reason we don't have as many ships as we did in 1916 is because, you know, we got these things called aircraft carriers. You can land airplanes on them. Now, what Obama should have said is he should have said, as the voters in Virginia know, because, you know, the defense industry is kind of headquartered out of there and they build ships there and in North Carolina and whatnot. And as he should, you know, what he should have said is, as the voters in these states where they build the ships and where there's a big naval presence, as they know, we got plenty of people in the Navy and we got plenty of equipment in the Navy and we're continuing to build it. And in fact, actually, Romney lied about that as well. He said that the Navy was had fewer ships than ever before or ever since 1916. No, actually, the Navy had fewer ships during the George W. Bush administration. But again, I personally think we have too many ships. But my opinion on this, you know, pro or con is not the issue, frankly, here. I think that the issue is the fact that there's a man running for president of the United States who is a serial liar and apparently feels quite comfortable with that. And there's a 50-50 chance he'll be our president. Now, you know, Ronald Reagan at least had some core principles that he understood and that he espoused. And in addition to that, you know, Reagan could read the prompter pretty well. He gave a pretty good speech, a brilliant speech, actually. He was a very, very good actor. He'd play the role of president. But he wasn't overtly lying. I mean, he forgot a lot. I mean, when he was deposed on Iran-Contra 168 times, he said, I don't remember. A little problem there with Alzheimer's. But Romney, I mean, I the only other president that I can think of who explicitly lied to the American people was Richard Nixon. Do you really want Richard Nixon in the White House? Again? Only this time thinking that America is the promised land for his religion?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I mean, really? That Salt Lake City is the new Zion? Forget about Israel. Jesus is coming back to America, and this guy is, and he's willing to lie to get there?
Little South Side of Chicago.
Yes, welcome back from Chicago. Tom Hartman here with you. And, oh, I know that Mike Papantonio was talking about some of the lies in the first hour, and he did a great job of talking about, you know, Mitt Romney's time in Paris as his military service or the equivalent thereof or whatever. It's, you know, what is with that? One of the other things, though, last night I was Romney and Obama, you know, thank goodness, again, Obama says, okay, we're going to fact check this. Romney's saying, oh, yeah, you know, you did exactly what I said. Detroit should happen to Detroit. Well, Romney, this is another classic example of Romney using half-truths. Romney did, in fact, say in his op-ed, as the right-wingers are pointing out, there was on the plane here, they had TV on the plane, and I got to watch some guy from Karl Rove's pack talking about this.
Oh, yeah, of course, you know, he did say that there should be government guarantees for the loans for the managed bankruptcy. But there was nobody willing to loan the money. I mean, whether there was or there wasn't government guarantees, there was nobody willing to run the money.
And so, you know, here's Mitt Romney going along saying, yeah, I did, you know, I would have done the same thing Obama did. In fact, I recommended it and he did it. I just would have done it sooner. It's a lie. What Romney was saying was go to the banks, give them a federal guarantee, backstop the loan with them. But none of the banks had any money to lend. They were all freaked out. They were borrowing trillions overnight from the Fed. I mean, you had $700, $800, $900 trillion in collateralized debt obligations and derivatives out there that were crashing and collapsing around us. And there was no way to make it happen. They couldn't do it. Oh, man, my call screen software just has croaked. So, you know, Shane, if you want to give me names of people to put on the air, I will do that. And in the meantime, I'll try to get back into it. But or I can just continue ranting, which I think I'm going to do. The idea. Just consider this for a moment. The idea that a person would run for president of the United States on the platform or using the strategy of that he is going to lie to the American people. I mean, just consider that for a moment. That he's going to lie to the American people. That's his official strategy. Say what? Really? Anyhow, Dean in Chicago. Hey, Dean, what's on your mind?
Yes, Tom, it's just completely, totally unbelievable, like what you just said. I mean, that's his strategy. But anyway, I'm going to make this real brief, as brief as I can. Last night, Obama missed an opportunity for the knockout punch by not mentioning Freeport, Illinois, what's going on with Romney and Freeport. Yeah. I think there are a couple of reasons why he didn't mention it. One is the visa program that allows people like those Chinese professionals to come in. And the other thing is the TPP, secret negotiations that are going on. I think he was afraid that Romney might bring one or both of those things up. So I think that might be a reason why he didn't do it. But the main thing I want to talk about is I think that the systematic effort to prevent the minority vote for this election, let's see, where's my mind now? The systematic effort to stop the vote will allow Romney to win this election on November 6th. And if you're familiar with the Mayan calendar is December 21st, 2012.
Hmm.
Exactly like 30 days later, Romney will be sworn in as President of the United States. Now, the scientists say that the Mayan calendar was more precise than our calendar, Our modern-day scientists say the Mayan calendar is more precise than our calendar. So that shows you how good they were thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
So it abruptly ends. So
yeah.
I think he's going to follow what his neocon masters are telling
him. So you're suggesting, is the bottom line here, Dee, of what you're saying, that you think that Romney has this apocalyptic worldview and then he's going to start a world war?
No, I think that his neocon perpetual war masters are going to convince him to do something like
that. Yeah, to a large extent they already have. Dee, thanks a lot for the call. I don't disagree with you. And this is one of the big problems that we have. I've got a backup, Sean. Thank you. It is just that, these screaming lies that this guy is telling. Are we really going to elect a liar as president? What happened to integrity in presidential politics? Why isn't the media going nuts right now? Randy in Seattle. Hey, Randy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I want to comment on why Mitt Romney or any human being would extend themselves with so many lies and exaggerations in front of so many people. And you just have to look at what Dick Cheney did for Kellogg Brown and Root. They were $5.25 billion in the hole for mesothelioma lawsuits.
Yeah, I know.
And
my dad was one of those lawsuits.
No big contracts. Well, they got well. And you look at the oil man George Bush and what he did for the oil industry. They are almost operating tax free, almost, and subsidized 10 years out when he leaves office. Almost. These are the motivations for Mitt Romney.
Randy, you're absolutely right. I mean, the bottom line here, and thanks for the call. The bottom line here is that in business, it's like, okay, if you got a lie to win, lie to win. I can't tell you how many times I have encountered that mentality. And, I've spent most of my life in the business world. It's never how I've conducted myself. And, frankly, it's not how most small business people conduct themselves. And it's not how I can't speak at the level of the trillion-dollar corporation, the multi-billion-dollar corporation. I've never been inside one other than providing services to them. When we owned the ad agency, we had some very large clients. And, one of the ones that really struck me was the senior vice president of one of the largest hotel chains in the United States, once made the comment to me that he was over lunch after a couple of drinks, that he was very careful to always hire people who were stupider than him because that guaranteed his job security. Right? People talk about, government bureaucrats. I'm telling you, the corporate world, do you really? I mean, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, you remember when they were first sworn in and George W. Bush came out and said, oh, yeah, we're going to be the CEO presidents. We both got MBAs. Is that really what we want? Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Tom, I think that the question that we need to ask is, what are we going to do if something happens to Mitt Romney and Ryan becomes president? The man that wants to end Social Security, end Medicare, and drown the American government in a bathtub.
Yeah, well, the drown in the bathtub part was Grover Norquist, but I'm sure Paul Ryan agrees with him. Grover Norquist, excellent point. Ed, Grover Norquist, the multimillionaire lobbyist who, K Street lobbyist in Washington, D.C., to whom all these Republicans have sworn fealty, have sworn that, we are yours. You own us. Oh, man, it is insane. Herman in Castlewood, Virginia. Hey, Herman, what's up?
Not much. I got a little food for thought for you. They had all those guys behind Romney for the photos going on?
You're talking about the coal miners a couple of weeks ago,
right.
A couple of months, a month or so ago, yeah.
I live right here in the coal area, and a lot of my friends have told me that they're almost guaranteed their jobs back on the 13th because it was really a ploy to send Southwest Virginia and this area in a big uproar about Obama cutting coal jobs.
Hmm.
My friends have told me that, they went ahead and laid them off ahead of time. That way it would cause a big stink.
Right.
Because, one way to get in there was to do that.
Yeah, you want to get people's attention, take away their jobs. And that will do it, or threaten their jobs, or say, oh, by the way, we need to show up at this photo op, or, hey, have you contributed to the Romney campaign? I'm telling you, I was talking the other day with a friend of mine who's very well connected in the state of Ohio and in the political circles there and what's going on. And, you know, who said what is going on in Ohio right now is so ugly that if this election is stolen, it will be stolen in Ohio. And I have been saying that all along. As I believe the 2004 election was stolen in Ohio, again, they still have this bizarre system of counting the votes where everything is run through central tabulators that are out of state. Last time that the computer was in Tennessee, this time it's going to be in Virginia.
Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And even if there's no election fraud that has to do with voting machines, because I know everybody's like, oh, don't talk about that. You know, that'll scare people away. They won't vote. Yeah, Tom Hartman here with you live from Chicago. We're using the studios, and thank you very much for the use of them to our good friends at WCPT, Matt and Damian and all the folks here, Charlie and Melissa and Fred, and on the list goes. Anyway, thank you for the use of your studios and for the fine time. I will be at the Hilton tonight in Chicago. I'll let you know all about it tomorrow, the third-party candidates debate. It should be interesting. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by the effort to free America's newest political prisoner, Don Siegelman. Free-don.org is the website. Talk Radio News. Hey, Ellen.
Well, hi. Listen, I was in the spin room last night, and the big issues, Tom, are I have to tell you, honestly, I agree with the Democrats, but the Republicans, man, they've got this down like you can. I mean, they must go to spin boot camp. I've never seen anything like it in my life. Yeah. I mean, they will look you straight in the eye, and they will say stuff. You know, it was interesting, the senator, Kelly Ayotte, I can never pronounce her last name. I've tried a million times, from New Hampshire. She was going on and on about the sequester, looking me straight in the eye, talking about how if you sequester all these people in New Hampshire, you're going to lose their job because of the shipping, that Romney is right. I've never seen anything like it quite in my life, honestly, and I've done a lot of these spin rooms.
So my analysis that Mitt Romney is a serial liar, and by the way, you were there 4 years ago at CPAC where all those conservatives were walking around with giant flippers and the dolphin guy, you know, and the flipper and everything.
Those flippers.
Okay.
Because I'm a pet
so
saved them. I started to make a mobile out of them.
Amazing. So there was actually a time when conservatives and Republicans did not like the fact that their candidate, or one of the guys who was running for president of the United States as a Republican, lied, that he changed his policies, he flip-flopped, and he would lie right to your face with an absolute straight face with no change in affect whatsoever. They used to not like that. Now they're all doing it? Is that what you're telling me, Ellen?
They are totally doing it. And they're talking, I mean, first of all, talk about flip-flops. He's saying, well, we can't kill our way to peace. I mean, he pushed himself last night in that debate to the left of Obama.
Right.
I was just in shock. And I was shocked at how good they are at doing this.
It is
really quite amazing.
Well, here's the thing, Ellen.
The other Republican meme, you've probably heard it, but I'll say it again, is the imperial presidency. Right. They're saying, you know, he has grabbed more executive power. Well, wait a minute. What happened to George Bush on that? And that's the other meme. So one meme is the sequester. And then, of course, they're going after the president for saying there won't be a sequester. I'm not sure I would have said that if I were him, but he did say it. Mm. And the second is the imperial presidency. And those are the two sort of things that they are going after him about, and it will not stop. Now, it's also interesting. I did talk with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the chairman of the Democratic Party, last night, and she actually talked a lot about Florida. And this is very interesting. She said, listen, yes, they are, you know, doing well in the polls and all that kind of stuff. She said, however, we have registered more Hispanic voters this time around. They're not somehow calling those people. And those people generally vote Democratic.
So you mean the Democratic Party
has registered these people? She talked about voter suppression, that they tried it in Florida. She said they are not succeeding. The Democratic Party has worked very hard. So she said, don't believe those polls necessarily, because we're not sure exactly who all those people are, who they're polling.
Yeah. Yeah. In other words, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is saying that they've registered a lot of Hispanics, and they are probably not polling the Hispanic vote as well as they should. I'm concerned that their polls of people who think that they're registered may include a lot of people who have been the victims of these dirty tricks that the Republicans have been pulling for the last 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 years of, you know, well, like we saw actually 12 years. We saw in 2000 where Catherine Harris threw 60,000 to 80,000 African Americans off the voter rolls just in time for the 2000 election in Florida.
Right. Well, she's very concerned about that, too. But apparently the Democratic Party has been spending a lot of time and a lot of money in Florida dealing with exactly this.
Yeah. Well, I'm more concerned about Ohio, frankly.
Well, the great state of Ohio, so am I. And we know what's happened there in the past. And we know how they would like to change things now.
Yeah.
So by the way, Ohio is interesting. And one of the things that we heard about, and I know this from my most intimate contacts in Ohio, that they are trying to pour in money on the Jewish vote, particularly in Cleveland, Ohio, to change the vote both on Josh Mandel, my cousin by marriage, and also on Obama on the Israel issue. And so what they're trying to do is target by letter various people in the Jewish community and to try and get them to understand that this is not Obama. This is really bad information that they're trying to put out.
In other words, the Democrats are trying to tell Jews in Ohio that they've been hearing propaganda from the Republicans about Obama's positions on presumably Israel, and that is propaganda is not true.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And what they're doing is they're doing this by trying to target via letter, personal phone calls with people. They're very aware that this is a huge problem. And they have people like Melman out there polling because they're trying to micro-target where the Republicans are pouring in money. And honestly, Tom, they are pouring in so much money.
They have an infinite supply, Ellen. In political terms, I mean, you know, you've got guys on Wall Street who are making $2 billion a year, paying 15% income taxes. For one of those guys to toss $100 million off is nothing. It's absolutely nothing. And the Supreme Court is at stake. That's why the Republicans are fighting so hard for this, in my opinion. So,
100% I agree.
Yeah. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
And check out free-don.org on the play of Don Siegelman. Mike Papantonio is going to be back while I head downtown Chicago to the Hilton to be there for the third-party debate.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman this hour. My next guest, she has really made her in the last year at least, is to try to figure out the Republicans' obsession with our sex lives. And before I go to Nancy Cohn, let me put it in perspective for you. Okay, let me set this up for you, Nancy. Here it is. Mark Sanford, governor of Carolina, disappears during Father's Day weekend to confess to his extramarital affair in Argentina. John Ensign, you know the story, another affair confessing to an extramarital affair with a married staffer. Larry Craig, solicitation of sex with a male policeman. These are all Republicans, by the way. These are every one of them are Republicans, Republican leaders. Bob Allen, arrested in the afternoon solicitation of prostitution from a male police officer. He is not only Republican, he is a huge Republican leader in the state of Florida. Randall Auconey, Republican leader, Republican activist arrested on suspicion of sexual assault on a child with force. 13-year-old girl, got her stoned on pot, had sex with her. Republican leader. Robert Bauman, Republican leader, Republican congressman. And, by the way, somebody who says he's a staunch anti-gay activist charged with having sex with a 15-year-old boy he picked up at a gay bar. Our Robert Bauman, Republican congressman, anti-sex, anti-gay activist, by the way. Parker Bina, Republican leader, activist, very active with the Bush administration, pleaded guilty to possession of child pornography, including pornography of children as young as 3 years old. Mark Foley, sex stalking of male pages, Republican, Florida. David Vitter, Louisiana. D.C. Madam, number one or two on his list, like to dress up like a child in diapers and have sex with prostitutes. These are the people, and of course, you know the Larry Craig. I mean, you know the rest of the stories. We hear them every day. So here now, they have their obsession with our sex lives. This is all about obsession with our sex lives, control over our sex lives. And fortunately, I have Nancy Cohen with me, who's been following this insanity, and she can talk about what she's found. Nancy, you know these stories. I only got through a fraction of them. Always Republican, yeah. Always something bizarre, always something just you go, what?
Yeah, Mike, well, all I have to say is ick. Excuse me for a second while I step out to take a shower.
Right.
But anyway, this is, you know, I've been talking to you a lot the past couple months about the war on women. But the war on women is not just about women. It's kind of a proxy war for a war on sex. Mm-hmm. Now, if Romney wins, we are all screwed.
Mm-hmm.
Women, men, women who like men who like women, women who like women, men who like men. You know, we're all on the same battleship. And they've got their 1916 cannons aimed at all of us. And our sexual freedom, our sex lives, our privacy, our freedom is actually on the line in this election.
Yeah, and exactly. But the thing that is so troubling, Nancy, that you've done such a good job capturing is these people who are telling us how to live our sex lives. I have just scratched the surface, yes. The surface of the Republican deviant list. I mean, listen, Robert Bauman, Republican congressman, anti-gay activist, out there saying how bad gay marriage is, having sex with a 15-year-old boy he picked up at a gay bar. You know, Randall Auconey talking about how bad pornography is on day one, and then he faces charges related to having sex with a child. A 13-year-old child by getting her stoned and then having sex with her. This is the Republican leadership that is out there saying, let us tell you how to live your life. Let us tell you what you should do in your bedroom. What are they telling us we should do in our bedroom, Nancy?
Well, obviously what they tell us is exactly different than what they say. I mean, we could put this party on the couch for 10 years and still not know what is really driving them, except this perversion and this hypocrisy. But let's look at what they want to do to the rest of us. Except for the illegal stuff, I really don't care what they do, and I would like it if they would stay out of the rest of our lives about what we do. But as far as they're concerned, the only legitimate sex is between married heterosexuals for the purposes of having children. So let me give you an example. The state of Utah still has on its books the law that it's illegal for unmarried consenting adults to have sex. It's considered a Class B misdemeanor for consenting adults to have sex outside of marriage. You know, when the birth control mandate came into effect this summer, one of the Republican representatives, Mike Kelly, likened it to a terrorist attack, likened it to 9/11. You know, so it's really insane. You know,
let me
have a party that is obsessed with sex when we actually have real issues
that
we need to deal with.
Let's talk about how far they wanted to go. Okay, they want to repeal Griswold, which says that it's okay for people to use contraceptives. I understand Griswold, the way Griswold went was, first of all, you had to get the right to use a contraceptive if you were married. Understand, that's where it started, if you can imagine that. And then you had to get, you couldn't use a contraceptive unless you were married. Then it goes to, so what we want, they want to do, they want to take Griswold away and say,
right.
No, if you're single, you may not buy a contraceptive. Now, okay, that on top of Roe v. Wade saying, no, you know, you can be raped, you can be a victim of all kinds of violence, your health can be at risk. But Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan want to make it reverse Roe v. Wade completely and make it illegal. Now, all they have to do is get one more Supreme Court judge, don't they?
Exactly, exactly. You know, Romney and Ryan, they do want to make abortion a crime in the country again. Romney has said that he thinks Griswold was wrongly decided, so that would wipe away the guarantee that birth control couldn't be outlawed. I mean, birth control was outlawed in this country for about 75 years.
Yeah, people forget
went
that,
to
don't they?
Prison right. For selling birth control repeatedly.
Right.
So, yes, they are one justice away from being able to overturn Roe. And, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, bless her soul. I mean, we should all be, you know, kind of putting a prayer shield around her if Romney wins. She's 79 years old, and she's a cancer survivor. Now, I have no doubt that if Romney wins, she will do her best to survive his presidency. But really, we want our, you know, women's rights and men's rights to freedom to hang on that?
Yeah, this isn't just about women. This is about what happens behind closed doors in your bedroom. This is where they want to get. These are the same people accused of having sex with 13-year-olds, the worst kind of conduct. And it seems like it's always Republican, and it's always Republican leader, and it's always somebody who day one says how horrible this act of sex may be, and day two, they're involved in the act of sex with 13-year-old boys, with 13-year-old, 15-year-old boys, 13-year-old girls. And you go, really, I mean, where's the credibility? I'm Mike Papantonio. I'm sitting in for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back. Follow me on Twitter, Ring of Fire Radio. I want to know what you're thinking.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman, talking with Nancy Cohen when we come back about how the Republicans want control of your sex life behind closed doors. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman this last hour. I have Nancy Cohen with me. She knows more about Republicans trying to spy and change your sex life than most anybody I've ever talked to. She's had to follow this topic. It's really weird beyond belief. You think people actually think I'm making these stories up about Republican sex offenders. Go to the website. Look up Republican sex offender. I can't even get to all of them. I went through like one page of the stories are even more horrible. The stories go on to, you know, some Republican leader that is so anti-pornography being charged with raping his own daughters. These stories are one after another. What is it, Nancy, about that Republican mind? What is it? What in the hell is that? And that they want to tell us, they want to tell people who are normal that, you know, how we ought to live our sex lives. And it's not just about women, is it?
It is not about just women. I think that this is what being obsessed with sex and repressing sex breeds. You don't really find much of this kind of perversion and violence among people, I think, who have a healthy attitude towards sex. I mean, this is something that this country, you know, a kind of bigger issue that this country has to deal with. But I want to say that I think, you know, Romney doesn't come off like one of the religious zealots. I do believe he's a good family man and all that. But he has sealed himself for eternity to the Republican sex police. And he, whatever you think of who he really is inside, he will do their bidding in office. Now, I also think that there's evidence from his time in Massachusetts as governor that he really shares some of this social extremism that we, you know, see in Todd Akin, that we saw in Rick Santorum. And that's something, you know, obviously he's etch-a-sketching that away right now, but I think it's really important for people to know his record.
Okay, this is so crazy that honestly people don't. I got somebody tweet me, send me the list that you just mentioned. It's almost like they can't believe that the Republican sex offender list is true. It's completely true. I've done story after story on this thing. But let's talk about how crazy this is. Arizona, a good article you wrote, Nancy, called Screwed. Arizona bill included a show me your birth control paper provision. Explain to the listeners what that meant, what that Republican gaggle of nuts out in Arizona wanted to do. What did they want to accomplish?
Right. Well, it was one of the state versions of what was called the Blunt Amendment that would have given employers the ability to fire you if you, well, in Arizona the case was if you use birth control, you would have to show your employer that you only needed it for a medical reason for it to be covered. Now, of course, in showing your employer your birth control if you're not married, and the bill says that an employer can, you know, deny you things for a moral objection, you're opening yourself up to being fired.
Okay, let's go. New Hampshire. Let's go New Hampshire. New Hampshire recommended that married couples.
New Hampshire's version, when they were debating it, one of the Republicans suggested when he was criticized, you know, it's mostly married people that are using this. And he said, well, married people should wait and should be abstinent from sex until they're ready for children.
Yeah, well, that's the new talk. That is King. Talk about Steve King. I mean, Iowa Republican took the floor of the House last summer.
Most interesting ones, because King's craziness started before any of this nonsense about the birth control mandate being a war on religion. Back in August of 2011, he essentially said your sex life is destroying America, that the problem is if you provided insurance coverage of birth control, our birth rate would go down so far that Americans would basically become extinct.
Okay, anyway, and then his pal, Mike Kelly, called a press conference and said, listen, you know, you think December 7th was bad at Pearl Harbor? You think September 11th was bad? The date that tops all of that is August 1st, 2012, a day where a mandate went into effect that said it required healthcare insurers, God, this is just awful, to provide free contraceptive coverage for their employees. And he said, this is a date that will live in infamy. And then he got all of his crazy, red-faced, nut evangelical types rallied up to join in the fight. And his question, if not now, then when? If not who? If not us, then who? I mean, crazy stuff. They were in a frothing frenzy. They were in a frothing frenzy. I mean, it looked like the place was going to explode. And so another Republican leader. So what does that mean if we put the top Republican leader? This is just state by state, baby. I mean, we're not even talking federal here. Well, we're talking state by state. What happens when you put a Mitt Romney in charge? You got 1 minute. Tell me what your prediction is.
Well, what happens if you put Mitt Romney in charge is that you kind of let loose these crazies in the state. Because once you eliminate the Supreme Court decisions, Roe v. Wade and Griswold, then these crazies in the state can do everything. Now, Romney will also sign personhood bills, which would outlaw birth control. I'm sure he would sign the forcible rape bills that have come up through Congress. So, you know, what my article in Playboy called Screwed does is it, like, goes through kind of point by point the ways in which this could happen. It sounds implausible.
It's not.
I am convinced that we are headed this way.
It is not implausible at all. Trust me that it's not. Nancy Cohen, always pleasure to talk to you. Because you follow these people so we don't have to.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel so much better that you follow crazy so we don't have to. Because there's no way. Once I know about these stories, these Republican sex stories, and then see this, what they're up to, it makes me crazy. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. I want to know what you're thinking about. Give me a call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I'm Mike Papantonio, and for Tom Hartman, got Frank Schaefer with me, Mormonism and Perpetual War. You'll love this interview. Stay with me. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, in for Tom. You know, during the last night's debate on foreign policy, Mitt Romney made it clear that if elected, he'd lead this country into more unwinnable, endless wars than the former Bush administration. No question about what he was telling us. His views on war are shaped by both the neocons running the GOP as well as his religion. And that's why we have to talk about his religion, mainstream media. His religion matters. Because the way he thinks about war, the way he thinks about American exceptionalism and the expansion of a manifest destiny of sorts, it matters. Frank Schaefer is the author of many, many books. The most recent is Crazy for God. Very smart man. He's always my go-to guy on religion. Frank, what was your take? I mean, it was clear. If you know this guy and you understand Mormonism, it was very clear what he was saying, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we all have to realize as voters is that if we didn't like George W. Bush's war making, George W. Bush is just a plain old evangelical Christian with a lot of neoconservative friends. Romney, on the other hand, is a Mormon bishop who belongs to a church that, as a body of believers, holds this idea of American exceptionalism right up there with their founding principles, the same way other Christians look at the deity of Christ, for instance. In other words, for a Mormon, the idea of America and American history is a sacred thing in a way that it really isn't for any other religious group. And so if we think that we were overextended under Bush, too aggressive, you ain't seen nothing yet. And I think the tip-off is that, except for last night's debate where Romney, from my point of view, was telling barefaced lies and trying to come to the center and really obscure what people know about his policy. Up till that point, if you look at his comments in the earlier parts of the campaign, he always was for a more belligerent stand. In other words, it's like the bank that never makes a mistake in your favor. You have to start wondering why Mitt Romney never has faulted the president, or say his predecessor, Bush, for being too aggressive on anything. In other words, it's why haven't we done more on Iran? Why aren't we doing more to support the state of Israel? Why weren't we more aggressive in Libya? Why haven't we upped the defense budget?
Okay, let me ask some specific questions. First of all, the Mormons, honestly, if you characterize what I've read, it is that they regard the United States as almost a new Zion, a new Jerusalem. I mean,
well, there's no almost about it. They claim that Jesus came here after he was raised from the dead, spoke to a light-skinned tribe of Indians that they claimed were a Jewish lost tribe. I know this all sounds insane, but that's what's in their book.
Well, go ahead with it, because
and that this is the new Zion, and indeed that America must save the world. And then on top of that, they have a prophecy that a Mormon leader will come forth at a time of great chaos.
The White Horse prophecy. White Horse prophecy. Yeah, the White Horse prophecy that, you know, that Tom's talked about a lot. But you see, what we're missing here is we're missing filling in the Mormon part of the equation, because mainstream media won't talk about the Mormon equation.
Well, see, the other reason we're missing it is because the other religious interested parties in America, the evangelical religious right and the Roman Catholic bishops, who you think would be screaming bloody murder from their point of view, are keeping silent because they've made a deal with the devil on this, saying basically we hate Obama so much that we are willing to help elect a president who's not just theology we disagree with, but whose policies really run counter, for instance, to take the Roman Catholic Church to the Roman Catholic social gospel on helping the poor, with Mitt Romney's commitment to an Ayn Randian view of really rubbing the faces of the poor in the dirt on behalf of the super wealthy, the supermen as he sees it, and Ryan sees it. And then on the other hand, the evangelicals, you know, I mean, it's a small scandal, but it's a big one if you know the territory. When you have the Billy Graham organization changing their website so that the definition of Mormonism is no longer a cult,
right,
taking that down.
A matter of weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, just because Franklin Graham, who's this far-right evangelical activist whose Billy Graham's son has prevailed upon his ailing father to jump back into politics on the side of this far-right candidate, you know, there's a lot going on in terms of evangelical support of Mitt Romney that any evangelical of conscience who cares about America's future, let alone about their religious principles, would have to really swallow hard. Because
when evangelicals start covering for
what they regard as Mormon heresy, don't get me wrong, I could care less about the theology of either party, but you got to hold people's feet to the fire to be consistent to their own philosophical.
Frank, let me ask some specific questions, okay? Now, you just answer this. Let's go down the list. Now, first of all, the point you've made is that when we hear Romney talk about this president, he's saying this president hasn't gone far enough because he didn't start a war with Iran. He didn't start a war with Libya. He didn't start a war with North Korea. And surrounding Romney are all the neocons who want him to. That's the first part.
He's resurrected the same George Bush cast, and I'll just say one other thing. Romney is the first American candidate in history who has gone abroad, as he did when he met Netanyahu in Israel, and made a deal with a foreign prime minister in this case to try to undermine a United States president for political purposes that would serve the hardliner Israeli settlers on the West Bank. And Romney has played this game, and it's a very, very dirty game. And if I may use a word that I guess would shock people, it's extremely unpatriotic.
Well, it is okay. Now let's go to this. Let's go to the next part of the. Let's talk about the Mormon mind. The Mormon mind is a zealot. I mean, they zealously believe, as we pointed out, that the United States is a New Jerusalem. That we're ordained by God. And now Mitt Romney believes he's actually ordained by God under the White Horse prophecy to rule this world. Now, give me the parts of that. Back it up into what Mormonism means, as maybe Krakow might do on Under the Banner of Heaven. Tell me the parts of Mormonism that you go, wow. Where does this notion come from?
Mormonism is unique in that every other major religion in America, with the exception of Scientology, which is an interesting parallel, is not an American-invented religion. In other words, it has some historical roots either into the Bible or the Quran or Hindu tradition or Buddhism, and tends to be very, very old. So it's had some rough edges rubbed off, and it's not America-centric, as in believing that everything begins and ends here. It comes out of the Middle East or India or wherever it may be. Mormonism is unique in that it's as American as Coca-Cola. It was invented here by people just, you know, in my great-grandparents' day, to put it in perspective. And it basically comes out of Joseph Smith's supposed prophecy where he got golden tablets brought to him by the angel Moroni, which he then copied down into a kind of a 19th century pulp fiction combination with the Bible, you know, taking passages from the Bible. And what he did is he brought in all sorts of stuff about America being the new Zion, city set on a hill. It would save the world.
Right.
So that it made his people pleased, because it's kind of the ultimate rooting for the home team. The problem is when you put this in a context of world affairs, with a man that's calling for a strike against Iran, which Romney wanted us to go to war with them, and he's backing off now for the public, but nobody thinks he's changed his intention. His support of the radical Zionists on the West Bank in Israel, which most American politicians have tried to be honest brokers between the Israelis and the Palestinians. You look at everything he's been saying in this campaign, and I say again, you know, if you don't like the George Bush years, this is Bush on steroids with an actual added ideological ingredient that no other American politician has ever run for office.
Okay, Frank, I got I've got two minutes. Tell me, how dangerous is he? What is he capable of?
Mitt Romney is capable of starting a nuclear war in the name of God if he believes that it's ordained in his prophetic view of the world. And that, if we think Goldwater was extreme and that ad in the campaign with Goldwater and Johnson, you know, won the campaign for Johnson by showing a nuke going off, this country cannot afford to take this risk when we have the good, steady hand of one of the best foreign policy presidents we've ever had. He's winding down two wars. If you don't want a third and a fourth war, you have to stop Mitt Romney from being elected. It's as simple as that.
Well, I got to tell you this, Frank. I read, I read constantly. Crazy for God, your last book. And you've written some great stuff. Crazy for God, I think, gives us, I've got 1 minute so we can respond to this, but it does the best job putting in place and having us understand how dangerous the dominionist evangelical movement is in America. Give me 30 seconds on, did I get that right?
Well, I'm glad of the compliment, and I'll tell you something. You can't understand American right-wing politics. You don't understand the Republican Party unless you understand what I wrote in my book. And if we're in the long term going to do something about these folks taking us in a more and more radical, insane direction, whether it's on gay rights or warmongering or how many wars in the Middle East we're going to get into, we've got to understand something about their theological mindset. These are dangerous fanatics, and we've got to pay as much attention to them as we've paid to the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and these enemies of ours, because we've got an enemy within which wants to turn this country essentially into a theocracy, and that's what my book is about.
And if you were to say, go get my best book that sums it up, what would it be?
Well, it would be Crazy for God.
Okay. I think so, Frank. Frank Schaefer, thank you for joining me. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. I'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. When we come back, I'll take your calls. Let me know what you're thinking about. Follow me on Twitter, Ring of Fire Radio.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman, taking your calls. I just got to respond to this. What I love about having this Twitter system when you tweet is I get to see really some crazy. Okay, now this is Worth Puckett. Worth, if you're listening, how crazy are you? I mean, I want you to think about it. I want you to sit down today and reflect. How crazy am I? Do I need medication crazy? Do I just feel better when I say stupid stuff crazy? How crazy is Worth Puckett? Let's use the rest of the day to think about it. But Worth asks me, he says, well, why doesn't mainstream media talk about Obama being a Muslim? Well, maybe, Worth, because Obama is not a Muslim. Just like Obama doesn't have concentration camps for very creepy people like you, Worth. Very creepy people. It started with people like you that said Obama had concentration camps. He was using FEMA trailers to put people like Worth Puckett in concentration camps because, well, they were teabag crazy. Well, you have to check yourself, Worth. You have to ask yourself, could I be a little bit crazy? Do I need medication? Or how about this, Worth? This is another one that the Worth Puckett crowd came out with. that Obama has made a deal with the UN. UN Army's going to come over here and take your gun, Worth. And I'm glad, because you are creepy crazy. And the advantage that Romney has is you are like the low-hanging fruitcake that Obama has to overcome, and that Mitt Romney gets to take advantage of at something like a debate. Because when Mitt Romney says something, you believe it. And you don't have – you're so low information that you believe he's a Muslim, okay? You're one of the people, Worth, that interrupt the free flow of democracy in this country. You're a threat to democracy, Worth. You're a threat because you have such little information about what you're talking about. And you have a right to vote. And that's scary as hell to me, Worth, Puckett. But it's our democracy, and, you know, so go vote. But before you do, sit down and ask yourself, am I medication crazy? Am I padded room crazy? Because chances are you are. Let's go to Patrick in Lake Station, Illinois. Patrick, you there?
Yeah, how you doing? Mike, it's good to hear from you. Hey, well, it's amazing because what you're talking about today is a lot of what I'm thinking of. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I watched the debate with my mother and my father, and they're Republican, mostly because they're religious. And, you know, I was thinking how a lot of people are voting Republican out of their interest, and a lot of it has to do with religion. And a lot of the people aren't nuts that are religious, but a lot of the leaders are. And I think that, you know, I talked to my mother, who was going to vote for Romney, and voted for Jill Stein. Couldn't talk her into Obama, but at least I took one vote away from Mitt Romney. And I did it by saying that the Republican policies are responsible for as much blood as any of the Democratic policies. You know, the Democrats aren't out trying to talk women into having abortions. You know, they're just leaving the women with the choice.
Patrick, you know the problem. Patrick, let me respond. Frank Schaefer was just on the line. Okay, Frank Schaefer has written more about what motivates the evangelical right. Now, here's what happens. This past Sunday, all over America, evangelical, crazy, crazy right stood up at their pulpit, and they told these sheep how to vote. They ordered them basically how to vote. They distribute in the church, they distribute pamphlets that tell these people how to vote. They're incapable of thinking for themselves because that's how they've come up. That's why they can't see. When Mitt Romney gets on the air and just makes stuff up, they'll never be able to see through it because they're incapable of seeing through it. Partially, and Schaefer will tell you in his book, a lot of it is fear. A lot of it is fear that God is going to punish them if they don't do what the preacher tells them to do. And that the preacher, like Billy Graham or the goofy son, the goofy Graham son, that he has some kind of contact with God and God is leading him. And if they don't do what goofy Graham does, tells them to do, that God will punish them. But most of it comes from fear. The other part comes from sheer ignorance. And that's what you're not going to change the evangelical right. They're always going to be there. But you ought to understand them. You should read Frank Schaefer. You should go back and look at the movie that I did called, it's called Jesus Camp. It's an interest. It was awarded, almost awarded the Academy Award. It's a documentary, but it's brilliant. I didn't do it. I was just in it. But it tells the story of the evangelical movement in America, and it's very, very scary. You got to understand it to deal with it. In order to change things, you have to understand all of the underpinning of that thing. I got to tell you, it's been fun. This is a big election. I don't know if I'll talk to you again before the election, but it's been fun. I want you to follow me on Twitter, Ring of Fire. Let me know what you're thinking. I probably was a little probably was a little harsh on Worth Puckett. But Puckett, I can't help it. I think you're crazy as a loon. I don't think that'll ever change. And there's nothing I'm going to do to try to change it. I'm Mike Papantonio. It's been a real pleasure. Tom Hartman's going to be following the debates of independent other parties tonight. You ought to follow what he's doing in Chicago. Thanks a lot. I'm out of here.
Listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.